I was just standing there watching the planes take off and noticed that plane was having problems. And I heard it sputter and it just went straight down.
One person is dead after a plane crash at Anchorage's Merrill Field. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, July 2nd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Sea Alaska Corporation plans for future stability.
I would say that central to what we came forward with was a turnaround plan for the company.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
A small airplane crashed during takeoff this morning around 8:25 a.m. at Merrill Field in Anchorage. The pilot and sole occupant is confirmed dead. Bystander Lana Jensen was waiting for her flight to Non-Dalton when she saw it happen.
I was just standing there watching the planes take off and noticed that plane was having problems. And I heard it sputter and it just went straight down.
Police arrived on the scene within 3 minutes of receiving the report of the crash. All of the runways at Merrill were closed for about an hour, but the airport has since reopened. The Anchorage Police Department has identified the deceased pilot as 61-year-old Charles Hancock. Next of kin have been notified. The Alaska Arctic Policy Commission held a listening session today in Anchorage. The aim was to get more statewide input, especially from the Alaska Native community, on how the commission should try to shape future Arctic policy. The commissioners and people making comments discussed what they can and cannot control in the changing Arctic. Representative Ben Nyack from Barrow attended the meeting. He says people from the Arctic want to make sure their voices are heard, especially since they still rely on the natural resources of the area, like marine mammals. He says his community understands their needs may be unique, but they live under state, national, and international governments.
And so we've learned how to work within this system. As you can see from what you heard today, we're not new to this.
Nyack says his Arctic community needs to be involved in government and business decision-making to protect their resources. The council used today's input and other public comments to produce a final report for the state's legislature early next year. The report outlines Alaska's written policy recommendations on topics ranging from scientific research to resource development to environmental protection in the Arctic. The Regional Native Corporation for Southeast Alaska has a new CEO, a new board chair, and a new board member. Leaders of Juneau-headquartered Sea Alaska are following a direction set by their predecessors, but they promised some changes following a recent board election. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Shareholders elected former Sea Alaska spokesman Ross Sobolev to an open seat. Sobolev is a commercial fisherman and legislative aide who lives in Juneau. Shareholders also re-elected incumbents Rosita Wirlf, Sidney Edenshaw, and Ed Thomas. A resolution limiting discretionary voting failed. After the election, the board chose Joseph Nelson as chairman. He replaces Albert Kukesh, who remains on the panel, but steps down from the post. New board member Sobolev was part of an independent slate called for shareholders for Sea Alaska. Though he was the only one to win, Sobolev says the slate's message was powerful.
Most of the board members I've spoken to, they know that the shareholders are interested in very positive changes at the company. And they and me are in the leadership, and we have to figure it out together.
The slate and most of the six other independent candidates criticized the board for allowing corporate operations to run into the red last year.
I would say that central to what we came forward with was a turnaround plan for the company.
The corporation's businesses lost a total of $57 million. Officials say that's changing.
Overall, it's going to be operational profit.
Anthony Malott is Sea Alaska's new president and CEO. The former Sea Alaska treasurer and chief investment officer replaces Chris McNeil Jr., who just retired. Malott says the first half of this year is looking good.
Of course, it's purely a forecast. We still have significant financial investment assets. So a market fall, a significant market fall, could take us off that forecast. But right now, the forecast is for profit.
He says that will boost dividends, but Sea Alaska's about 22,000 shareholders won't see the increase until next year. The Juneau-headquartered corporation still has debts, and Malott says it's a significant amount.
We have $18 million in long-term debt outstanding. It indicated a short-term because the maturity on that is this year. But all indications are that we're going to renew that.
That means the debt will be paid off later. But if it came due now, Malott says the corporation could handle it. One of Sea Alaska's top priorities is to buy a new business. It sold off its profitable plastics partnership and a smaller company last year to help fund the acquisition. Board Chairman Joe Nelson says the corporation continues to look for something closer to home.
We need to invest in areas that we care about. We need to invest in areas that we're able to be passionate about and we want to be the best in.
We've looked at the sustainable food industry. We've looked pretty in-depth into the fisheries landscape to see where we may fit.
CEO Malott says Sea Alaska could have up to $50 million to invest.
We've looked into Southeast-based businesses that either tie into any of the current natural resource-based businesses we have. And we've also looked into government contracting.
Nelson and Malott say they'll continue pursuing federal legislation, opening up more Tongass National Forest land to logging. What's been called the Sea Alaska Lands Bill has been stalled for years. This is Ed Schoenfeld, reporting from Juneau.
Governor Sean Parnell says an agreement has been signed that allows for the next stage in pursuing a major liquefied natural gas project. Parnell says environmental field work and pipeline engineering have begun as part of a phase in which the parties are expected to spend hundreds of millions of dollars. There's still no guarantee the mega project will be built, but Parnell called the agreement and work underway a mark of significant progress. The parties involved are BP, ConocoPhillips and ExxonMobil Corporation, TransCanada, and the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation. ConocoPhillips was previously a holdout to signing because of issues the company said were confidential. A spokeswoman said those issues have been resolved. Parnell said the project in the coming weeks will work to begin the process of securing an export license. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, record rainfall continues through much of interior Alaska.
Just the first day of July, we had 1.92 inches of rainfall, and that was a new record for that date, and it was almost three times what the previous record was.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Craig Taylor Equipment Company, an authorized dealer for over 15 manufacturers, including John Deere and Bobcat, celebrating 60 years of business in Alaska. More at CraigTaylorEquipment.com. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
A U.S. senator from Missouri is continuing her crackdown on the advantages Alaska Native corporations enjoy in government contracting. Senator Claire McCaskill this week pressed the Small Business Administration to show that rules in place since 2011 are tightening requirements on ANCs and producing better oversight. ANCs have won government contracts worth billions of dollars through a program designed to allow small, minority-owned companies to contract for government work without competition. Other businesses in the program are limited to contracts of up to $4 million. Alaska Native corporations, though, can get sole source contracts of any size, and they can work in joint venture with non-Native companies as long as the ANC owns 51%. McCaskill has previously sponsored bills to remove those special advantages. She's asking the SBA for a list of all such joint ventures since 2011 and for reports showing how Native communities benefited from these contracts. Alaska Senator Mark Begich in a press release says he's tried to reason with McCaskill, but he says she doesn't understand Alaska history. He says ANCs shouldn't be punished for their success. Rain continues to fall across the central and eastern interior as July extends a trend that made June Fairbanks' rainiest on record. National Weather Service meteorologist Scott Berg is tracking precipitation totals.
Just the first day of July, we had 1.92 inches of rainfall, and that was a new record for that date, and it was almost three times what the previous record was. And then since midnight last night, we've picked up a bit more. So far this month, we've had 2.73 inches of rain.
Berg says that puts Fairbanks well on its way to above normal rainfall in July.
Our normals for July are around 5 inches, so we're about halfway there already.
More rain is forecast for the first half of today. Berg says a band of rain over the area is expected to move off to the northeast later this afternoon. While the rain is expected to stop, Berg says area rivers will continue to rise, elevating flood potential.
We do look for most of them to start peaking by tomorrow sometime or even into Friday. Once the river forecast folks down at Anchorage arrive, we'll get some new model guidance from them as to where they're actually going to start peaking. But they are a little bit ahead of where we were forecasting them to be yesterday.
The Army Corps of Engineers sent out messages last night saying they anticipated lowering gates on the Moose Creek Dam at the Chena Flood Control Project late today or tomorrow. A flood warning is in effect for the Upper Chena, Salcha, Good Pasture Rivers, and the Eastern Alaska Range. Flood advisories have been issued for the Alaska Range east of the Parks Highway and the Birch Creek Basin north of Fairbanks. There's a flood watch for the Tanana River between the communities of Salcha and Tanana. Berg says the high water will coincide with more summer-like weather over the 4th of July weekend.
Drying conditions, thank goodness. We will see the temperatures come up a little bit into the 70s and possibly into the 80s for the weekend.
Berg says there will be a chance of afternoon thunderstorms throughout the weekend. The rain is resulting in dangerous driving conditions. State Department of Transportation Northern Region spokeswoman Meadow Bailey says she issued numerous travel advisories this morning.
For just about every road in the interior, reminding people or warning people that there's obviously extremely wet surfaces and a lot of people are experiencing hydroplaning. So just like in the winter driving, people need to reduce their speed and make sure that they're allowing extra time to reach their destination. This is not the kind of weather to be speeding around.
Bailey says the third major rain event in as many weeks is resulting in road damage.
We're seeing all kinds of potholes and just degradation of the sides of the road, so areas where we're kind of having some erosion and water's actually eating away sections of the road.
Bailey says DOT crews are driving area roads 24 hours a day, making emergency repairs. She says temporary repairs are also being made to the damage caused to the Denali Park Road last week by rain-swollen creeks near the road's end at mile 92.
We have a crew that's working on in Kantishna, and actually we have our maintenance crew is going there to kind of look at what longer term repairs will need to be made today. And so they're going to bring back pictures and kind of a more extensive report from that area.
The emergency repair work comes amidst numerous summer road construction and resurfacing projects the wet weather is hampering progress on. The largest king salmon run in Bristol Bay has reached the lower end of the escapement goal, but the managers with Fish and Game are hoping for more. KDLG's Mike Mason reports.
In recent years, many of the king salmon runs across Alaska have failed to reach their escapement goals. However, the king run to the Nooshigak River in Bristol Bay has met the escapement goals, and this year is no exception. On Tuesday, another 3,000 kings were counted as escapement, pushing the total up to 54,300. Tim Sands is the ADFNG Area Management Biologist in charge of the Nooshigak Commercial Fishing District for the Division of Commercial Fisheries.
That's a nice number to see 3,000 kings there, and I'd love to see that for a few more days. It would really get us into the middle of the goal range there, and that would be excellent.
The in-river escapement goal for Nooshigak River kings is between 50,000 to 120,000 fish, with a management priority to get 95,000 kings counted. Sands anticipates the king run will continue to show some strength through the middle of the month, much like the last couple of years.
We've had good numbers all the way through the middle of, you know, to the 15th or so of July, 1,000 plus a day, and it's definitely on the back side, but you know how on the front side we had lots of big spikes and lots of slow days. I'm hoping we have more of a steady stream come in here, a couple thousand, 1,000 to 3,000 a day for the next 10 days. And that will really get us, like I said, into the middle of the escapement goal range.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has stopped producing an actual forecast for the king salmon run to the Nooshigak River. Instead, the department has been producing a king salmon harvest projection. This year's projection anticipated a commercial king salmon harvest across all of Bristol Bay of about 21,000 fish. So far this season, just over 9,200 kings have been harvested commercially in Bristol Bay. 8,392 of those kings were taken from the Nooshigak District. Early in the season, before the start of the massive sockeye fishery, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game had 4 directed king salmon openings in the district. Total king salmon harvest during those directed king salmon openings was just 4,000 kings. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game will continue counting king salmon escapement to the Nooshigak River through about the middle of August. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
As severe restrictions on Chinook continue to hit subsistence users, early signs of strong chum runs are leading the Alaska Department of Fish and Game to announce some unanticipated commercial openings. Scott Kent is a biologist with ADF&G in Nome.
What is happening is this year we're having an early, strong chum salmon run in most areas of Norton Sound, and it's front-loaded in that, you know, it's hitting hard right now, and then it's probably going to drop off here considerably in a week or so. That doesn't mean that this next week isn't going to be pretty big. We're going to probably start to see a lot of fish passage this week and into through the weekend.
Across the region, the department is seeing some of the best chum counts on record for this time of year. At the Quinnyuk Tower on the north side of Norton Sound, 12,000 chum have already been counted, one of the best runs in the station's 49 years of operations. That's especially good news because the preseason forecast for that area was dismal.
We were not expecting directed openings on chum salmon in Gullivan and Elam this year, especially not this early. So it's a pleasant surprise.
The Norton Sound isn't the only region in Western Alaska seeing strong chum runs. A 3-hour opening on June 28th lifted gear restrictions in the lower Yukon, giving some families a much-needed chance to put up chum on their racks. Basil Larson called in from Russian Mission during a weekly Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association teleconference yesterday.
Everybody is real happy for the Y1 and Y2 3-hour 6-inch gillnet opening that you guys had. But there's not a lot of families that could afford to go down and go fish for those 3 hours. But the families that did go down, I talked to them, and they are all done with their summer chum subsistence harvest.
But for callers further upriver on the Yukon, like Janet Woods in Rampart, there's frustration that having to wait until nearly all the Chinook have passed just to have a shot at fishing for chums.
And we've been waiting and waiting. We can't even so much put in a net. If you let people fish even one day, that would eliminate all these problems with people getting caught and getting their fishnet taken away and having to go to court and pay. We need to have our fish. That's what sustains us.
Representatives from ADF&G explained upriver communities can expect a similar subsistence opening once 90% of the Chinook have passed, which based on past years is likely to be sometime around July 18th. Kent says while the Chinook restrictions have been severe, they appear to be working. For a full list of ADF&G's salmon openings in the Norton Sound area, go to alaskapublic.org.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP Alaska, committed to the state of Alaska through investment, production, and jobs for future generations of Alaskans. More at alaska.bp.com. Nano Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine. And by Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering restorative, preventive, and cosmetic dentistry with 3 offices, 2 in Anchorage and 1 in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com.
With budget cuts and declining state funding looming, the University of Alaska Anchorage is in the process of scrutinizing its priorities to figure out what is sustainable and what is not. APRN's Josh Edge reports.
When officials at UAA discuss prioritization, what they are talking about is scaling back in areas that aren't preparing students for today's careers or addressing the state's future workforce demands. Staff and faculty groups are spearheading the initial information gathering and evaluation process, which is split into two different areas.
One of the functions that are performed in the university, the administrative, physical functions, everything from mowing the grass to running my office.
That's Bear Baker. He's the provost and vice chancellor of student affairs at UAA.
The other part are the academic programs. So one of the things we're looking at is every single program, and instead of thinking of them as we have in the past, we're required to review programs on a regular basis by the Board of Regents. We're looking at programs as anything that consumes resource in one form or another.
UAA offers around 360 academic programs, ranging from bachelor's, master's, and PhD programs to certificates, minors, and occupational endorsements. Baker says a lot of the university's growth has come in the last 15 years or so.
It was easy to justify just about any new program against our mission at the time. And with new money coming in all the time, it was easy to add programs. We just didn't pay much attention to getting rid of those that were no longer well-subscribed.
Most of the new money came from state allocations. But now state funding is declining, and Baker says it's a trend that could continue.
If we believe the governor is really going to go for the sustainable budget over a 4 or 5 year period, on the back of an envelope, I calculate the academic side of the house, my side of the house's responsibility will be someplace in the neighborhood of 180 faculty positions that will disappear. If 180 faculty positions disappear, that's a lot of classes and a lot of programs. We don't know that for sure.
It's not clear what will happen in future state budgets, but the university did see about $7 million in cuts this year. That means about 20 faculty positions will be eliminated. Baker says most of those cuts are being addressed by not filling vacant positions, but he says that's not a good long-term strategy. That's where the prioritization process will come into play. Vice Chancellor Bill Spindle agrees the past two decades have seen expanded course offerings, but says now it's time for the university to focus on its strengths.
Our strengths are workforce development, health, engineering, business, education, the sciences. That we have strengths in lots of areas, but now we have to refine those strengths, and that's basically what's going to happen out of this prioritization.
Reports compiled by the staff and faculty groups evaluating the alignment of university functions have been submitted to the chancellor's office and are under consideration. Changes stemming from the reports will likely begin as soon as FY16. In Anchorage, I'm Josh Edge.
Residents of the capital city now qualify for rural federal housing loans from the Department of Agriculture after Congress raised the population cap for communities to qualify. The loans make home ownership more accessible in a city that lists affordable housing as one of its top issues. KTOO's Lisa Fu has the story.
May and Caitlin Del Castello are married with two children. May says they've been renting in Juneau for 3 years and pay about $1,500 a month for a two-bedroom apartment.
It is a bit expensive, so we are looking, of course, trying to purchase a home or build our own house.
May and Kaylin are both in their 30s. She works at the registrar's office at the university. He's a janitor at the Federal Building. They're hoping to buy a three-bedroom home for about $300,000. Kaylin says the thought of putting a 10% down payment on a house is terrifying.
To put that much down and to not have any buying power, it's kind of scary.
But Kaylin is feeling better about buying a home after learning about USDA's rural development housing programs, which, as a Juneau resident, he can now qualify for. Keith Perkins is director of USDA Rural Development in Southeast Alaska, based in Sitka.
I know Juneau's a capital city, and villages look at Juneau as the big city. But if you look across the country at capital cities, most of them are in rural areas and they're rural communities. And so Juneau kind of fits that mold. And Juneau really is a rural community by national standards.
Depending on certain criteria, rural development housing programs can offer terms like 100% financing, long-term repayment plans, subsidized interest rates, and no down payment. Juneau Economic Development Council Director Brian Holst says, like in other Alaska communities, many Juneau residents have difficulty finding affordable housing or housing that costs no more than 30% of their income. He says Juneau also doesn't have enough housing to meet demand.
Many of our builders build homes that are hard for lower-income people to purchase because there aren't a lot of programs out there that allow for those lower-cost homes to be accessed by our working class.
Juneau builder Russ McDougall of Max Design and Construction says the housing programs do just that. A maximum loan amount for a Juneau resident is about $323,000.
That's a tough market to build in, and it's not impossible, but it means that you're going to have a builder that's interested in targeting that market. And I think that we'll see that because of this program, there will be builders that will take advantage of that and move that way.
McDougall remembers a time when many houses were being built in Juneau.
When I graduated high school in 1976, I went to work for a contractor here that was building around Melbourne Park. And I believe they built about 80 the year that I worked for them.
McDougall says land in the center of the Mendenhall Valley was flat and easy to develop.
Those new homes were selling in the neighborhood of $50,000 for a two-bedroom house with a garage on its own lot.
A 2012 Juneau Housing Needs Report indicated the average price of a single-family unattached home was close to $380,000. USDA Rural Development Loan Technician Marshall License says she's already received calls from Juneau residents about the loans and anticipates a lot more interest.
Just talking from other lenders and other realtors and people here in Juneau that, yeah, we're expecting a large number of phone calls next week.
May and Kaylin Del Castello say they'll surely be among those interested callers. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ann Hillman in Anchorage, Ed Schoenfeld and Lisa Fu in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Mike Mason in Dillingham, and Zachariah Hughes in Nome. APRN's Liz Ruskin reported from Washington, D.C. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Doy Unlimited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. And by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. Attention, Alaska gardeners. Invasive weeds are a threat to landscaping, lawns, and gardens. They can spread and harm Alaska wildlife and waterways. Potted plants, hay, gravel, and soil, even clothing and vehicles can transport invasive plants to Alaska. So learn more at alaskainvasives.org. Let's protect Alaska together. Visit alaskainvasives.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Agriculture and the U.S. Forest Service.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.